see it every day. I see it.
Dr. Impostar.
It is? Oh. This is Dr. Professor Dr. Feather Postar Feather. Damien.
This is the midnight. No, Sensei, I need you! Gadfly.
And this is Dr. Head. And you are experiencing.
Now that was my microtonal type.
It was pretty good.
Thanks.
Sounded alien.
Thank you.
Better read maybe the between.
Maybe it's Henge. Maybe it's Henge.
Oh,
maybe it's,
there you go.
Stonehenge. My favorite.
Stonehenge.
That's my favorite Henge.
Stonehenge.
Yeah. Your name is Airclept.
That's right.
Oh. Yeah, are we ready to go?
Yeah, we're going.
Yes, hey,
we're live without a net.
We are going to talk about this kind of crappy-ass movie. I recommend it. I'm just totally, I'm sorry, people.
You're a fucking liar, Feather.
This really crappy-ass movie. Yeah. No, we're going to talk about Paul Thomas Anderson's latest effort. Wait a minute, I'll remember the title here. One battle after another. Is that it?
That's my notes. I guess
right,
the first
right.
time.
Yeah. Phew, I got that right.
Yeah.
Right. Just released, what, in 25, was it?
Yep.
28, 20? Yeah. And directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, written by Paul Thomas Anderson, based on the book by Thomas Pynchon called Vineland. Which is a terrific book in its own right, but then we could talk about Thomas Pynchon forever. Has a interesting cast. Leonardo DiCaprio as he's the one of the main guys as Bob. Sean Penn in probably I think one of his best roles ever. I think he's just absolutely fantastic in this movie. He plays Colonel Stephen J. Lockjaw. And then we have probably the other most prominent person, one of my all-time favorite actors, Benicio del Toro, who plays Sensei Sergio Saint Carlos. And then we have Teyana Taylor, who plays Perfidia. I'll be honest, I don't know anything about her.
Yeah, both of them.
I Perfidia, never really.
What's her full name? Perfidia.
Beverly Hills.
Perfidia Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. Very, very, very odd name. Very odd name. And the movie is about a group of revolutionaries, and it's kind of nebulous, really, who they are, and like, it's, I don't know, it's not really based on anything like historical as far as I know, and I'll be honest, I did not do a lot of research on this movie, as I normally do, and I just didn't for some reason. I just enjoyed the movie, watched it a couple of times and absorbed it and said, okay, I'm just going to go on with the movie. But it's about revolutionaries, and they're pretty badass, but then they get into a situation where somebody dies. They usually don't, they try not to kill anybody, in there because they're bombing things but they end up going to a bank to rob a bank, and the Perfidia, right? Shoots the.
I think it's Jungle Pussy, or is it? Or is it Perfidia?
I thought Perfidia shot
the. Maybe it was.
She shot this security guard, and it was a that scene alone was, you know, you watch it up there and everybody's, it's just kind of a free for all mayhem, you know, oh, we're revolutionaries, blah, blah, blah. But then this kind of brings it home. And it's horrific when she shoots him, you know, and you can tell, you know, she didn't want to do it, but he kept pushing. This guard just kept, you know, crawling on the floor toward her and then reached for his gun, you know, and she had to kill him. Well, that just kind of put everything, the kibosh on everything, and everybody kind of dissipated. And the two main characters, Bob and Perfidio, were lovers, and they had a baby. And the story then takes, after this all happens, they kind of disperse, and the story takes place 16 years later. When the girl child has grown up and is living with Bob, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, and he's kind of really screwed up, drug head, you know, not really a druggie, but you know, he like smokes a lot of pot, you know, and drinks and stuff, and his life is kind of screwed up because I think, you know, he was really in love with Perfidia in a big way, and you know, they had to split up and separate, and so it takes place 16 years later, and they start chasing him again, and well, yeah, it's so hard. I want to tell the whole story, you know, but it's hard. I don't want to, you know, kind of right, let it go. And that introduces Sean Penn's character, Colonel Lockjaw, who takes a shining.
He was earlier. He was there. He was in the first.
He was in the first part. Yes.
Yeah, he was in the first.
Right. He was, because he's there's a big reference here to kind of current politics in a lot of ways, with the situations of you know, the fascism in America, which has taken place, and there is that element, and Lockjaw is one of the head people of this element, you know, and you learn pretty early on he's just a badass, just a bad guy, not a badass. He's a bad guy. He's just not a good guy, and he is smitten with her, and you're right, because they don't know whose child it is. It could have been his, because he has kind of a fling with her that they don't really, you know, it's not really like gone in detail, but and that kind of comes out later. And so I think I'm going to kind of stop there and throw it out, because like I say I could probably talk about this movie myself for just quite a while. The only thing I want to say before I bring it up, yeah, I read Vineland. This is odd, because I read Vineland a long time ago, and I did not know that this movie was based on Vineland. You know, when I'm watching, I'm going, you know, it's kind of familiar. I'm going, I don't, you know, but I didn't know that it was based. And so Gadfly told me, yeah, it was based on Vineland. And as soon as he said that, oh, well, shit, that makes a lot of sense, you know. And I started remembering the book. It's been 30 years since I read the book or something like that. But anyway, so I'm going to pass it on. Gadfly, hit you up on this.
Yeah, I really like this movie. I liked it even better the second time I watched it, and even better the third time I watched it when I started writing down all the quotes that I thought were hilarious or meaningful, you know, because there's stuff where you can tell it's pure Paul Thomas Anderson, you know what I mean? He has a certain way of doing things, and like, he's one of the only people that can get away with it. Anybody else would look like an idiot trying to name Perfidia Beverly Hills or any of these other things that he did, you know. And that Greyhawk 10, I'm calling a Greyhawk 10. People are now using that term, saying, I want to speak to your supervisor, because that's what, oh, yeah, that's what it doesn't mean anything else. It's just something Anderson made up. But I think the whole movie is purely character driven. You know what I mean? Like, the plot isn't really anything elaborate. You know, the situations are really revolve around the actions of the characters. So like Beverly, you know, Perfidia Beverly Hills is a fucking psycho. She is, mindset is in this thing. And like, whenever they're about to do something, they're going to blow up that tower. She's like, let's fuck right now. And he's like, it's going to blow up. She's like, all crawling all over him and stuff like that. And then she's, you know, she didn't have to leave. She left him because she's like, I'm not a mom. You know, yeah. This is not yeah. me. This revolution will not be. You know, and then she starts getting angry at him for being a man and all that kind of stuff. So then she is followed by Lockjaw. And Lockjaw, they finally catch her because she shot somebody. And he gets her out of it and gets her in witness protection because she becomes a rat. So her integrity is, you know, and somebody says something in the movie, a leader becomes a poor leader when all they do is think about themselves. You know what I mean? And so, and I'm like, mm-hmm. there's the whole character arc for her. But I was, I liked all the characters. I liked the subtleties of it. I liked the fact that Sean Penn based his whole walk on Vince McMahon. the wrestling guy that headed up the wrestling.
He did.
So if you watch Vince McMahon, when
I watched him walk, but I didn't. Yeah. I didn't know that he had the.
Yeah, well, that's what he said. He said it was kind of a combination of that and, you know, some other
stuff.
But it was great. I mean, that walk was, you know, so cool, you know, and just.
And it's so distinctive.
It is.
You know, when you first see him walk, you kind of chuckle. You know, what the fucking. You know, he looks like a peacock.
He does.
Because. That's his personality too, you know. He's you know, got a very fucked up personality. And what is the name? You know, here again, forgive me, but what was the name of the secret organization?
The French,
which is one of the most hilarious things about the
Christmas
whole
Adventurers Club.
Yeah, Christmas Adventurers Club. Yeah,
the Christmas Adventurers.
Oh, that Hail Saint Nick.
Yeah, Hail Saint Nick.
And then they got to do the hand gesture, the triangle.
Yeah. Wait a minute, it's in the poitrine. Yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah. The
I thought that was, you know, like you said, a lot of funny, just a lot of humor in the movie. Yeah. You know, and you know, Paul Thomas Anderson is really good at putting something you'd laugh, and then the next minute you go, oh, God, yeah. You know, he's a master. He's one of the best directors to come down the pike in a long, long time. But yeah, okay. I'm sorry. I kind of interrupted you there. Gabe,
no, go ahead. I'd say I'm wanting to hear what Dr. Head has to say about it.
I first time I started watching this, I didn't get more than 15 minutes in. It was, and I stopped because I thought, oh, what the fuck is this? This whole thing with Lockjaw. I'm like, Lockjaw, that's his name? Are you serious? You know, and then the whole, like, having sex with him, like, get up, that scene. I'm like, and him walking around the boner. I'm like, what the fuck? What is going on here? And I'm like, no. Then when I had to watch it again, thank you, Professor Feather. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And the worst of all, I watched it in real time. I didn't watch it on my computer. I watched it on TV. No, I downloaded it. But I just, I had to be in there. I'm like, oh, let's watch it. I'm like, oh my God. So now there are things, though, by the end of it, and I'll explain, there were things I know that were really funny. The Christmas Adventures Club was hysterical in its blackness and in its humor. You know, Hail Saint Nick. I mean, there were things that were very, very funny and outrageous, like the names. You know, with the Thunder Pussy or Jungle Pussy and, you know, all these other ones. And then I couldn't tell if the humor then was intentional or not. There were, like, at times, I'm like, is this trying to be funny? It left me questioning because it didn't lean enough to tell me or give me enough, leave me enough information whether it was trying to be funny or a comedy or serious and unintentionally funny. But then I saw, like, this exploitation thing, because there was that first, like, maybe half an hour or so of the or 40 minutes, there's a huge segment where the music is, like, clicking and ticking. It's really frantic, and it adds to the intensity while you're all blowing up the stuff, you know? But then the soundtrack changes to, it's like, blaxploitation, and it becomes like, okay, then I saw Perfidia Beverly Hills, I'm thinking Tarantino, this is exploitation, that's what this is. But then it didn't lean into exploitation. I mean, little bits and pieces, but it didn't go that direction, and it for me it felt very erratic and misplaced. Like, it's a drama, it's trying to be funny, there's some exploitation and ridiculous stuff, but I don't know if it's succeeding in any of those. Now, that being said, I thought some of the performances were really amazing. DiCaprio is a really good actor, and I think he was really, really good in this role. But Sean Penn was amazing. I mean, just the way he talked, and the way he changed his voice and the rhythm of his face, and especially after he came back after being shot, that scene was brilliant. And when he looks like Jonah Hex or something that, you know, he's got this, you know, and I just thought that was hysterical. And then the plots themselves, like, okay, we got these revolutionaries, now we got this big time, now we got the daughter drama, then we got these other elements, then this whole lockjaw thing, and then it opens up to like, oh, now we've got these fucking cult white, you know, Klansmen, like, what? And to be like, what the fuck is this movie trying to be? So that's my initial reaction. I think on subsequent viewings, now that I got it all the way, the confusion, and I see the whole arc, I might really appreciate it much more. I don't know if that's the case, but I know Paul Thomas Anderson because I love There Will Be Blood. I mean, it is such a powerful, big movie, you know, and again, amazing performances. So I know what he's capable of, and I know all these wonderful things that he does. And so I know there's intent. So maybe it's just me that I missed it. So I'm willing to let it sit and come back to it.
Yeah, I think it's well worth a second watch, just because it is there is a lot involved, you know, and he's always pretty dense in most of his movies. I think what it is too, his movies in a lot of ways are more reflective of true life than, you know, even if it's a fantastic situation, there's truisms in there that just like you were saying, is this a comedy? Is this no, because life is not any one thing, you know. It's a combination. That's the beauty of his writing, I think. It's a combination of everything and how you put it together. You brought Tarantino in, absolutely, and I think Tarantino's that way too in a lot, you know. They rely on fantastic devices, but there's always that element that's really a sense of, you know, how reality is, you know, because reality is not just a suspense or a comedy, you know, and I think he's one of the best masters at writing the craft of writing, and we haven't even mentioned my favorite character, who is not in the movie very much, but he's so fucking great because he can just, you can put his picture on the screen and I'll say, yeah, this is great.
You mean the guy from Emergency?
Benicio del Toro.
Yeah.
Benicio del Toro. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the Gadfly? Tell the story about him.
Oh, they were filming this, Paul Thomas Anderson wanted to do things a little different. He wanted to involve the actors in their parts a lot more, you know, where he had, you know, had these really tight scripts. He said a lot of stuff changed because they would workshop it, and they would change in the moment, even with the two new women, because he's like, they were amazing, you know, and it was just, it became like this creative, like, concept. Well, Benicio had to go do the Phoenician scheme. And everybody agreed. They're like, well, we're shutting down until he's done. And then we'll start back up again, because they didn't want to do any of this stuff without him. You know, they wanted everybody there. And then the way they were timing the shooting and all that kind of stuff. And he is my favorite character in the whole thing, you know.
He's great. He's so great.
Have you been drinking? I had a few small beers.
In the car. A few small beers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, he's got all these. He's got the Sergio's wisdom. Punch first, philosophize in the ER. The other one is, Sensei says, swing wild, hit hard, regret later. And then the last one, he goes, Sensei's path, chaos in, enlightenment out, maybe.
And his part is so kind of almost a throwaway, nebulous, you know, but it's
like
just,
the chorus or the choragus. It shows up when it's needed to push things along.
It is kind of,
literally a vehicle, because he's driving them.
The force for getting people out.
It ties him back to the immigration thing that the beginning comes to too, because what does he say? I wrote this down. He says, I've got a little Latino Harriet Tubman situation going on at my place, all legit, from the heart, no cash.
Yeah. His part was very good, very good. And Teyana Taylor played Perfidia.
Yep.
So I don't know much about her. She's a singer, I guess. I guess I'm getting too old for some of these people.
No, she didn't. Do much. She hasn't done much. Neither her.
She hasn't really. Yeah,
I think the other one.
I looked up to see what she had done. Yeah, she hasn't really done a whole lot of movies.
And what's the other one? Infinity something? Infinity? I can't remember her name.
She was a movie called 1001. I never heard of. The Rip. I never heard of. Straw. She plays detective in Straw. I never heard. Unfortunately, I don't know who these movies. So,
yeah.
I liked her a lot. I thought she was really good. All the acting. There's nobody bad in this movie for sure. I have to go back and read Vinland again now. I remember when I read it years ago, and I'm a big Thomas Pynchon fan, so I really liked the movie, and I need to go back and read and see exactly how much how close it is to the book, because I honestly don't really remember tons about the book. That was probably my period when I was reading so much. I would read, I'd read a novel a week, and just crammed books in my head, and a lot of them have kind of dissipated a little bit.
Wasn't that one of his first books?
I'm not real sure.
Yeah,
his first book was Gravity's Rainbow.
Okay, because 1990 is when that came out.
Was it
Vinland?
Gravity's Rainbow did?
No, Vinland came out in 1990.
Oh, Vinland, 90? Was it 90?
Yeah, because I don't know when he started writing. Was he much earlier in the 80s, 70s?
Yeah, 80s. It had to be 70s, in the 70s. That's a good question. I'm not real sure.
It was Mason Dixon before that as well, or is that after?
I think so.
That's interesting. I think, to address the kind of humor thing that Dr. Head was saying, is I think what Paul Thomas Anderson does is it's not like a ba-dump bump, It's not it's just finding the peculiar and the almost kind of absurd. It's believable that people would say that shit, I love...
In the moment,
yeah. I love DiCaprio, because he's got some great lines, and I love his just kind of stoned out but manic, but he's really fucking effective,
Yeah.
Like when he starts ramping up, he finds it. I love the idea of the device that if you're near somebody, it's the only foolproof to know that they're a friend. Mm-hmm. And you start hearing the timing and stuff like that. So I thought that was great. And then the whole thing. So here's what I get out of this: when he's calling up and can't remember the passwords, and he's getting all pissed off. Yeah. That's exactly what we have to deal with in our life, because we constantly forget our fucking passwords. And then how do you get your password? If you can't remember it. So that whole thing.
I write them all down.
Yeah. So do I anymore.
I have to. Yeah. I can't remember them because I have so many different accounts. Yeah, I get it, man. And they're always asking me to change it, like every 6 months.
Yeah.
So
It's awesome. That's what I said.
I love that whole thing about the passwords, and him just kind of being a stoner drunk.
I kind of got high before I made this call.
Yeah.
Hey, you called me.
I can relate a lot to his character.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It progresses, like you said, talking about Lockjaw, and just see his arc in the movie and how it ends, which is,
it's a gas, baby.
It's a gas.
But then, that whole club. I mean, that's just poking fun at those type of organizations, and which is funny because it's funny, but they're fucking serious,
Because they're the ones in charge,
Yeah.
We're kind of seeing more and more of that kind of stuff, and that those scary secret societies are because those are the ones who actually pull the strings, and get stuff done. Right. And that's, I think, the terror that when I saw that, I'm like, I can see so many connection as to what, you know, where we're at now. And I'm like, I see a lot of this stuff, the need for revolution, you know, and then this crazy secret society run by people willing to, like, you know, kill. And are you pure enough? I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. It's, I see the reflection he's bringing back. So I got that satire. Like, this is wicked black satire, like blacker than Dr., you know, Strangelove, you know, I mean, this is vicious black. And so I could appreciate that in that moment, because it was needed, and which made me appreciate that part of the movie. Yeah.
One of my favorite parts is towards the end. And, you know, they have Tim Smith, who's the guy they call in to the Christmas club and tell him they've got a problem and he needs to go take care of it. And then they're telling, what is he? I have it written down. He goes, next thing you know, Colonel Lockjaw mobilized his task force into Cross and conducted a Class A raid on the Chicken Lickin' Frozen Farm. And Tim Smith, the assassin guy, goes, oh no, I love their nuggets. And the other guy goes, well, this could mean a nugget shortage. You know, again, you know, not a bit
right.
of a, but it's really funny.
It's funny.
I love the car chase, you know, towards the end where they're all converging, because you've got his car and it's like, and you go to DiCaprio Bob, and Bob, he's like, yeah, it's got this wine too, and they keep,
he's like, come on, come on, go fast, like,
come on, come on, come on, and it's got the spoiler on it and the rim,
yeah, the camera point of view, yeah. I was like, I was, you know, pretty baked, and I'm like, oh, I'm getting nauseated. I'm like, I don't want to keep on going up and down these hills, man. That is not going to be work out well for me. But it was effective though, because yeah. It sets up the shot in down the road, yeah. When the daughter creates the trap for the assassin,
which is brilliant. I know it's great.
Yes, because she has been taught by those nuns. I love the name of the Sisters of the Beaver or something like that, or you know, whatever it is. You know, it's like, I'm like, okay. I mean, there were outrageously funny things, but that I could appreciate on their own. And I thought, oh, these nuns are growing pot. Good for you, man. You know. So there are things that are very fun.
Sensei asking Siri for the directions to the beaver, you know, the Sisterhood of the Beaver, or whatever it was called.
You're right.
He's like, hey,
right.
Siri, where's Sisterhood? And then they're like, oh, yeah. So they go. Yeah. Yeah, he's great. And I like him and DiCaprio because they're not these bodybuilder dudes, you know what I mean? They do not really have a much of a care, you know what I mean, about being those muscle and toned and doing all that stuff. You know, Benicio's total dad bod. and you know, if you look at DiCaprio, he is not, there's no working out, you know what I mean? He's not like dad bod, but he's not like jacked up or any of that kind of stuff, which I really appreciate that kind of stuff these days, because all you see are these like Adonises, you know, that you can tell that they,
and then you,
yeah, go ahead,
and then you see Lockjaw,
yeah.
And Penn,
yep.
He's, you know,
he was ripped. I mean, his arms.
He looks the part.
Yeah.
Yes.
He looks the part, you know, just really has. Yeah. Just has
the whole Hitler hair. Thing.
The hair was. Oh, my God. The hair was
grooming it. So great. Yeah.
But it reminded me a little bit of the hair from Fifth Element.
Yes.
Gary Oldman, the Gary Oldman's comb over. You know, and I'm like. Because it wasn't strictly military. It wasn't like a buzz cut. Yeah. You know, it was Nazi Germany. I mean, right here on his face, you know, it was, you know, so yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, crazy. When he's at
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, when he's at the nunnery and he's got that tight black t-shirt on, and she goes, oh, your t-shirt's pretty tight. And he goes, what? What's that mean? I'm not gay. And she goes, I wasn't thinking that. She goes, however, I did see that there's lifts in your shoes. He gets all pissed off. There's so much that's going on in there. And again, I love the kind of the fact that Lockjaw is this badass, and he goes up against Bob, and you start to see Bob fall into his paranoia, but also the routine. So when Benicio shoves him out of the car and he rolls, he hides. He can, you know, he can wire the car because he's a bomb maker and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And then he figures out how to find them. You know, he's talking some Spanish and he's like, ah, what am I saying? And they're like, this way. And he's like, that way. Yes, that way. So he's, and then when he gets to the nunnery, he doesn't go in. he's smart enough that he goes up and he looks to see what's if something's going on, you know, without knowing. That's just his modus operandi from back when he was a you know,
he was like the ordnance guy.
Yes.
Back then, you know, yep. setting off, you know, incendiary devices and stuff. Yeah. That was his job.
Even when he's talking about making. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I just got to say that was just, you know, that whole beginning, you know, of the revolution and the frenetic aspects of it, you know, and like you said, the you know, Perfidia, it's like just nothing but this huge turn on for her, you know. She's saying, you know, this is, you know, that's, yeah, that was one of my first real chuckles there. You know, they're out in the field.
So not getting ready knowing to blow it was up. Supposed to be that dark or a comedy, yeah. I was taking it as this is, they're making this serious. You know, yeah. they are like, oh my God, is this really happening? Like, are you, like, and that was really when I started to check out, because I'm thinking, I'm not thinking exploitation. I'm not thinking comedy or satire. I'm just thinking they're taking themselves this seriously, and like, and that this is what this movie going to be like. Why is everyone talking about how good it is? I'm like, you know, and that's, I mean, that was my initial, one of my initial turnoffs. I mean, after seeing the whole thing and like looking, I'm like, okay, I can see that was a moment of comedy that was supposed to be there. Again, that style of comedy, not where the bottom bump, but you know, rather plump, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, when all the revolutionaries, you know, you could see that there wasn't just an altruism in their actions. They got off on it. They all did, because when they're driving away in that car, they're all like, oh, and shooting guns, yeah. You know, and all that kind of shit. And you're like, this is, you know, that's why Perfidia, she's an extreme narcissist. You know what I mean? Even when he's sitting there making the bomb, you know, in the apartment, she's just slowly walking towards him because it's fucking turning her on, you know. And, you know, and then they do the bomb and she wants to fuck right there under the tower and stuff. But, yeah, as I said, it's every time I watch it so far, I've seen some different things and started like finding some through lines and some patterns.
And yeah, then, and some, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, it's there again, you know, hate to keep beating the horse, I guess, but it's the genius of Paul Thomas Anderson. This guy can weave stories that are very, very complex, very, and you know, you think they're going to go one way and they go a different way. He's just brilliant at it. You know, we've got a handful of people, you know, right now that are just absolutely great filmmakers. You know, him, Tarantino, I put Tarantino right up in that bunch. Wes Anderson is in that bunch. You know, that's when I watch it now. When I watch a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, I don't go into it almost with no expectation, mm-hmm. because I want him to lead me, mm-hmm. and he does. And he's one of my favorite people. So, you know, I'm willing to just let him lead me. And so I'll go with whatever he's putting in and then, you know, try to figure it out. And if you go back and look at almost all of his movies, are almost all like that. I mean, it's because he's not just a director. He's a writer, you know, and I think that's a big key sometimes. I hate to say it because, you know, the whole onus of I don't know if it's an onus of, you know, now I lost the word. The director, the director, writer, producer. What do you call them? You know, the auteur.
Auteur, yeah.
Yeah,
an auteur. Okay.
An auteur. I couldn't think of the word. And he is definitely, you know, in that category. You know, there's a lot of that are in that category that shouldn't, you know, suck. But he's not one of them.
He's an all-encompassing filmmaker too, because he understands cameras, he understands lenses, he understands film stock. Apparently, if you read his scripts, because he's doing them himself, he's like, this is going to be a 50mm lens here. We're going to do this. We're gonna, you know. Ramp up the shutter, whatever. You know, he's got all the technical stuff in there. And then he teaches and has taught, I think, now for 20 years at UCLA, a film studies class. He doesn't even have a high school diploma, you know. That's, you know, how good he is. And then he works with Martin Scorsese doing film preservation.
Yeah.
Somebody goes, oh, is Tarantino in on that? And he goes, no. And then he just moves on. Scorsese's another one. There's a really great documentary series on Apple TV that's Scorsese's whole life. And you think, you know, a master filmmaker like that probably had it easy, you know, as soon as he made that first great movie. And no, it was up and down. You're only as good as that last movie that you make. Go ahead.
What's the Apple show that Seth Rogen is in?
The studio.
Speaking of Martin Scorsese,
yep,
he's in that, and that is absolutely brilliant.
Yep,
and it's also absolutely true. Here's one of the most famous directors of all time, mm-hmm. and they just fuck him over, because of the studio, but anyway, yeah. He's I like Scorsese, but I'm not a fan of all of his movies. There's a lot of his movies I just don't really like very well.
I think his best one is Kundun.
Yeah, I think that's a really good movie. Yes, you're right. You're right. That's good. Yeah, and
it's so atypical of his movies, you know. And I think Age of Innocence is really good too.
Yeah, it is. That's true. He makes some of the best movies ever, but you know, just he's not as consistent for me as some of these other like Paul Thomas Anderson. Paul Thomas Anderson has only made one movie that I didn't really like. It's a good movie, I just didn't like it. But everything else he's done, I've you know, they're like some of my top movies of all time. And this is you know, fits right in there. And like you said, and that's the other thing, I think every Paul Thomas, and like every really good movie, you've got to watch them several times, you know, to really get the full brunt of them. And that's the beauty of movies, you know. You can't watch them over and over.
Yeah, and if you watch his very first movie, Hard Eight, you know.
Hard Eight.
Which is, you know, it's got its flaws. Mm-hmm. But for being, 23 years old or whatever, you know, and then he goes on to make Boogie Nights, which is a movie he made several times as a kid, you know, editing it from between VHS and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I still go back to Boogie Nights and I think it's one of the perfect films. Like, it's got the greatest, you know, and he has a lot of these themes, which are ad hoc families. You know what I mean? It's, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, you have your relationship with your family, but then you have your relationship with the family you built. And I think Boogie Nights is brilliant. Ad hoc family, you know what I mean? Just, you know, how it all kind of winds up. And I love the fact that John C. Reilly becomes a magician with a sexy lady in the background, you know.
That's a good movie that, you know, you go, how could you make a good story out of this plot, you know, out of this? And he does. He makes this just absolutely brilliant story out of you know, such a sleazy subject. You know?
Right, with one of the most uncomfortable scenes I've ever witnessed on film. That was when they're going to the guy's house. There's a guy like throwing firecrackers.
Alfred Molina.
Scene was so fucking intense.
Yes.
You know, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, just get this over, get out of it, you know. And it was just like, oh, you are making us wait, you are doing this on purpose. But you know, but it was really effective. So the movie is a hard movie to watch, and like, while I can appreciate it, it's not one I would go back to
and watch
it for enjoyment other than to analyze it as a movie. Because it's the emotional arc. But I, you know, I do have D. Diggler on my, as a license plate. So I've been getting a lot of action, but then a lot of laughter at the end. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, because when they find out, it's not.
That's another movie that has some great comedy in it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, but especially between Dirk Diggler and
John C. Reilly. John C. Reilly.
Their conversations are so fucking funny. Just so funny.
Right. And so you see then his ability. I mean, I appreciate it. His ability to blend these genres. See, now Boogie Nights worked for me because it leaned into those genres. So I think as a writer, I think he's been maybe refining and like narrowing that reach so that it's still funny. But he's like, I want to make it more subtle and more subtle. you know, to its purest essence, yeah, which I wonder if this movie does that, because the comedy in Boogie Nights was really funny. The tension was really tense. So it leaned into those. It was much more, I could see that beautiful comedy. It took a lot longer for me to get it in this one battle after another. So I'm wondering if it's him as a writer just refining and getting better, more subtle. Better at his craft.
Yeah, I see his films close to literature. You know what I mean? Like, there's a way that he writes things that you can only get away with in writing, but then he gets away with it in film. So I've always watched how he does that. And you mentioned There Will Be Blood. To me, that was him saying, hey, Kubrick, this is how you make a Kubrick film. You know what I mean? Like, because if that whole initial scene with the sound and the mountains and stuff like that, as soon as that came on screen, I'm like going, he's going after Kubrick now. You know?
Yeah. Here it is. You're waiting for the wrench to fly up, the oily wrench. You know?
And it's brilliant. And again, you know, working with I used to not like Daniel Day-Lewis because he used to do these art films like My Left Foot. I fucking hated the movie. You know, and I'm like, what a pretentious, you know, asshole. Mm-hmm. But then I started watching stuff like Age of Innocence, and then I saw him
at Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York.
Gangs of Butcher. Holy fuck, is he good in Gangs of New York? Oh, Bill the Butcher. Jesus Christ, is he scary?
And here's the thing: he couldn't get it made. He was trying to get that made, and the only reason it got made is because DiCaprio just came off of Titanic, and they said, Titanic, you can do anything you want. And he goes, good, we're going to make Martin Scorsese's film. And he's been doing that ever since. That's why he's in so many Martin Scorsese films, is because he's like, they'll make it if I'm in it. So, and so Scorsese's like, he's a great actor. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, when you look back, I look back at the earliest movie performance of his, DiCaprio's, it was What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Fucking brilliant.
And, yes, fucking amazing movie. And his performance is, like, believable and so off, like, yeah, like you see an actor who's already at his peak when he's like, what, well, how old was he? Like 15 or
I think he
or
was,
so?
Or he was 18 or
13?
Yeah, I think 18? I think he was like 18 or 19. He was on the TV show Silver Spoons when he was younger.
Oh,
so he was a child actor. You know,
I see. Okay, that, so. Well, brilliant performance. But he's always been good. I mean, I have not liked everything he's been in, but his performances have been great. You know, like in The Revenant, I thought it was wonderful.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's another filmmaker that's awesome.
Yes, have we done The Revenant?
No, it'd be a good one.
I don't think we have, no.
Oh, okay. I think we should have to tackle that one. And he's just really, really good. So his performance was amazing. But, yeah, he's
that's why I said everybody's performance. And you know, Paul Thomas Anderson is kind of an actor's director. I think he's always been kind of that way, you know. I want to say that that's the influence of his father.
Yeah. And Altman, you know.
And Altman.
Yeah. Altman. He was saying that in Boogie Nights, he said, I only gave an actor one direction one time. And that was, what's the redheaded woman?
Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore. When she's doing coke. And she's doing coke with the roller girl.
Yeah.
He goes, she'd never done coke before. And he goes, and I've done a lot of coke. I said, you got to say it faster. You got to be frantic and say it faster. And they, you know, they both like sped up. And he goes, perfect. You know, he said, and that was the only direction I gave any actor. And he goes, the only other thing is that, Philip Baker Hall said, why do you have to film me getting out of that car three times? Why don't you just repeat that? He goes, no, that's not how I want it. He goes, I want three different ways of you coming out of that car with those people. So if you watch it, they're different. You know, each one's different, you know, same angle and stuff like that. But why he made that decision, I don't know. But I think it probably would not be as effective if it was just a repeat, you know. So, yeah, you really have to watch his stuff. He puts a lot of stuff in the background, too. So if you've ever seen what was the next one he did? Magnolia. There's all this biblical reference in there, and there's all these scenes where he has 185, you know, for whatever, you know, there's on the roof when the guy is about to jump off in the wire on the edge of there, it says 185, and it's hidden because it's just wire going across. So he's got all kinds of stuff. in there. And when I saw Magnolia, man, I was just blown away. I went to see it with my then wife, and, you know, we just both walked out of there. And our favorite thing was to go to see a movie and then go talk about it. And, you know, we'd go get, like, dessert or dinner or something like that. We sat in Frisch's for, like, 3 hours talking about that movie, which was great. I think the only other movie that I watched that I talked about that was Southland Tales. Roger, oh, yeah. Roger was like, my friend Roger goes, just watch it. I'm like, was it good? He goes, just watch it. And so I think he heard me upstairs watching it. And as soon as it was done, he comes down. He's like, what'd you think? And we proceeded to talk about that film for nearly 3 hours, you know, and it was sober. You know, I mean, it was like, we were just like talking about, wow, this is just really weird. And I think that his two movies, that one and Donnie Darko, have a huge Paul Thomas Anderson influence on them. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into those.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
And Donnie Darko
especially Southland.
Yeah. Well, and so is Donnie Darko. There's that whole scene where bus, you know, and the camera kind of twirls out. And
yeah.
Yeah, I think Donnie Darko is brilliant. You know, it's a good.
I really like it, too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the director's cut's great, too. I don't know if you've seen the director's cut.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have a DVD somewhere that has a 2-disc set that has both as the regular and the thing. So back to One Battle After Another. We've got to get into some of these quotes because they're fucking great, right? So I love the one that says, "No, Sensei, I need you." Calm pause. Courage, Bob. That's, you know, because he has kind of this like voice of reason, you know. And I love like when he's sending him off with the skateboarders, the way he presents the gun, and he just keeps repeating the same thing, and Bob's freaking out, and he's like, "Here, Bob."
it's very telling too, because he is sensei,
yeah.
And so when you watch him, he's unflappable.
Yes.
Unflappable. No, there's no scene in there where he's not kind of in control of himself and of the situation as much as he can make the control of the situation.
Right. A master of calm. He makes good decisions calm. and he sticks with them. He's an encourager.
Yeah.
Right. He shows up. Yeah. Yeah. He shows up at the point of need, you know, as the vehicle, as the device. But every scene that he's in, he just chews up, you know. Yes, because I like him too, and his performance is just exceptional. Like, you know, so yes, there were things that I know I will like much more on a second viewing.
Because
I appreciated them on the first, you know, and so I think it'll become part of the richer tapestry because I know what this guy is capable. I've seen his movies, so, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I love it when Bob's freaking out and he's like, "No fear, like Tom fucking Cruise." They're both, "Yeah, yeah." Who is in Magnolia?
Yeah,
this is great. I love it when they're looking for the beaver farm, you know, or the beaver place, Lockjaw. And he's talking to that guy that has the taco. It just says taco on his shirt.
Yeah,
and he's like, "Do they have weapons?" And he goes, "I think they're vegetarians."
Right. Yeah.
The girl, the daughter, she turns out to be a pretty good character too.
Yes.
And not, you know, she's there again. So she's got her own brain and she's been trained.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And it starts
to her father's credit. Yeah.
Yes. It starts kicking in.
I mean, she's a normal teenager with like, you know, I don't want to be around my dad. He's not cool. And she doesn't believe all the conspiracy stuff that he's been telling her. You know, she doesn't, you know, and then she falls into it and learns that it's real, and he tells her
that his mom is dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that she was a hero.
And she was a hero, you know, and that's another, you know, part of the arc, you know, is finding out, you know, that her mom wasn't really a hero, that she was really a rat, you know.
Well, and she suspected it because they didn't tell her. She asked.
Yeah. Yeah,
she
goes,
"My
right.
dad said she's dead and she's a hero. Was she a rat?" And she goes, "Yeah."
Finally. Yeah, yeah, finally,
yeah.
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 Yeah. So she knew. So I said she was really smart. I love the fact that she had been doing all this taekwondo or whatever, you know, and then that you see her in the with the nuns and she's beating up the bag and stuff like that. She never uses it. She doesn't.
That's true.
There's nowhere where she does it.
Yeah.
I love
kept expecting her to, and she doesn't. Yeah.
Well, in that scene where the guy's going to drop her off at the white pres- supremacist, you know. And you see he has that moment of crisis, and he's like, I can't do it. And, you know, he goes in, and they all kill each other. It's, you know, yeah. She sneaks up. And I love the fact that she goes in, and she gets the wrong pocket just to go over to the other side and get the other pocket and stuff like that. So, yeah, very, very good stuff. And nobody shuts their door. They get in the car and they start driving, and all of a sudden
driving backwards.
Flaps, yeah, it flaps.
Inertia will close it when I go in the different direction.
I thought when he did it, when Bob did it, that he was going to back up and knock the door
off. That's what I thought too.
That, yes, that's what I was expecting.
I'm and like, it didn't happen. I was like, okay, nope. Anderson, you're all right.
Yep. Yeah.
you're not doing the expected, you know?
No.
That's one of his beauties, I think. Yeah.
Those the whole things with the, you know, the cars going up and down those hills. And some of those, I remember driving those myself, and I loved that feeling where you would just like, almost like you were floating. Because you were coming down so much, and you're like in the car, and you're like, ooh, that's pretty cool. Other than if you're like somebody who doesn't like that, like Boise would probably be like vomiting everywhere.
Yeah, I did not like that either. I don't do motion like very well. Yeah. I can never play those first person shooters like, you know, Doom or anything like that. So, that was fine. I got what they were doing, and I appreciated it. It was an interesting angle. I just sometimes like, okay, they're on the road. I'll look down. I'm like, I fell at my stomach. And then it was all over. But I loved how it set up, like I mentioned, the crash.
Yeah.
Setting, you know, and that to me was really delicious. Yes. And as well, the moment where they recognize, like, here he comes, DiCaprio's character comes up and making sure that his girl's okay, you know. Yeah. And it was a good moment because, you know, she was happy to be back with him. And
at first she has PTSD. Then, she's not recognized.
Right. She doesn't recognize him.
She's like yelling out the catchphrases and stuff like that.
The catchphrase,
And the fact that she still considers him her dad, even though she had found out that genetically, you know, Lockjaw was her father. And she runs away. Is it daddy-daughter time? Is it daddy-daughter time? Daddy-daughter play? And he's chasing her around. So, yeah, it's so good. What's the one guy that's on with the Christmas club? He's like, Lockjaw got his dick dirty. Time to get it clean.
Yeah, well, it was one of the guys. Well, who was it? The one who was in the emergency. The show from the 70s.
Oh, right.
He was one of the, he was one of the Squad 51. Squad 51. Yep. I forget.
Yeah.
Larry, maybe? Larry something? But it was great seeing him. He was like the head.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, oh, great. They got this guy. We recognize him. Again, it was a very Tarantino move. They had this like 70s exploitation era figure. But then also with the white hair, I'm like, you know, it was just that I thought was great. You know, he didn't have a lot to say, but he was good. And then you could just see the sinister, like, I was like, oh, okay, now we have a crazy, you know, secret organization. Oh, that, you know, it was kind of getting ridiculous, but I was leaning into the humor by that time, even on the first viewing.
Yeah, when at the end, when they're interviewing Lockjaw, and they're like, so have you ever had sexual intercourse with a black woman? And he's like, I was reverse raped.
Yeah. How does that happen?
I was drugged. And, you know, and he goes, how did you know if you were drugged? He goes, well, there were feelings in my private area and residue. And they're like, why did he want it? He goes, I think she wanted my power. She saw my power. And then one guy goes, a semen demon?
You have to see the humor in that. I mean, it's really funny.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because they parallel Lockjaw with Sensei, because Sensei has all those sayings, and that towards the end, Lockjaw has that one saying that says, Lockjaw's orders, fight dirty, win clean.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was so, that whole thinly veiled finger pointing of the fascist aspects of the military, and, you know, mirroring at really what's going on right now, you know, very much so, without being blatant about it. You know, I thought that was, you know, pretty topical and justified, and rightfully so, you know, because showing it how it really is, you know.
Yes. Yeah, it's prescient, you know, without making it too melodramatic, you know.
Yeah.
Or two. Yeah, right, right. Yes, you're right.
Here's what I love about this is it didn't make a lot of money in the theaters, but they left it in the theater for like all of the rest of 2025. So it was in theaters all of that time. And Warner Brothers had a year where you could tell they're just like, we're going to make good shit. You know, so they did Mickey 17. They did Sinners. They did Weapons. If you haven't seen Weapons, fucking seen amazing. Weapons. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's amazing. It's the wife from Wolfman. She plays the main character in it. She's great. And it's a weird fucking movie. And, you know,
great movie.
It, and a lot of these, you know, you've got the battle.
We should do an episode on it.
On Weapons? Yeah. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. I don't know if it's
not. Yeah. I'll have to look it up because
I think it is. I've seen it on our Roku, come across our Roku, so I'm sure it's streaming somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was really good. It's a creepy, you know, it gets kind of Lynchian in moments, you know, but it's not overall Lynchian, you know. It's just there's one character in there when she comes in, you're like going, whoa. You're looking at her and you're like, that is just fucking odd, you know.
It's on Amazon. It's on Prime. Weapons is on Prime.
Is it? No, you don't need to buy it.
Just subscription.
Nice.
It's also on Slink. It's also on, like Apple TV, Fandango, things like that. But HBO Max also, if you have that.
No, I don't have any of those. I have Apple right now. Is the only thing I have. And I have Prime.
Yeah, I think that's what you said. Weapons is on Prime.
It's on Prime. Yeah, I'll have to go out and watch it because I've never seen it.
What's my favorite kind of pussy? Mexican hairless. there's all kinds of good stuff. When Bob comes out of Sensei's back room, I need a weapon. All you got is nunchucks.
Yeah, it definitely has a lot of good lines. But there again, you know, there isn't much about the movie that isn't good.
No, as I said, I really liked it, you know, and I was the same as you, Dr. Ed. When I first started watching it, I'm like, is this him going really serious, you know? But then as soon as Lockjaw, she does the thing with Lockjaw,
and the Christmas Club.
The Christmas Club, yeah, you're going, okay.
Christmas Club was hysterical.
This is absurdity. Well, and Hail, I love the fact that Hail Satan Nicholas sounds like they're saying Saint Satan. Like they're going to be about to say, right. Hail Saint Nicholas.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. And what was the one woman pussy?
Jungle Pussy?
Jungle Pussy. That is that lady's artist name. She's an artist.
Oh, really?
And she's known as Jungle Pussy, the artist. And so he wrote that in, and she's Jungle Pussy.
Funny.
Wow. Because it fit in with the really, you know, exploitation aspect of it. It definitely feels like something. There are parts of this that feels like it should have been in a movie shot in the Philippines with Sid Haig, you know, Sid Haig. So, and Pam Grier, you know, like that whole thing, being obsessed and being driven with the military stuff, the, you know, the revolutionary stuff. It feels, you know, there's an exploitation element that I can appreciate. But
when he pokes fun at millennials too, because when he's talking to the guy on the phone and the guy won't give him the password, the guy goes, "I feel like you're violating my space, man." And he's like, "What are you, 15 years old?" He goes, "I'm on the other end of the phone. I'm my
yes,
so, yeah." So it's a, it's, as I said, it's so multi-layered. It's great. But, you know, I think we talked as much about Paul Thomas Anderson as we did the movie, you know, which...
Yeah, really.
Which is fine, you know.
Kind of hard not to, you know.
I know, yeah. I could talk about him all day long because, I mean, he's one of my favorite filmmakers, if not my favorite, you know.
Yeah.
But, I would say, yeah, go see...
He's probably, if I had to, somebody said, what is your, you know, who you're going to pick as your favorite? He's pretty close. Mm-hmm. Because he's been more consistent for me than even, like, you know, one of my favorites is Altman.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not consistent. There's movies of his I just don't like, you know, just don't like. But when he makes a good movie, it's a really good movie.
But I think Altman took more chances, too, because he did a lot of genre stuff that Paul Thomas Anderson doesn't really do, except for Silk Threads or whatever, or what was it? About the clothes.
Invisible
Thread? The Silk... What? Was it the Silk Thread or...
It was the Invisible
that.
Thread, maybe it was. I don't know.
Invisible
something,
Thread.
Something like that, yeah.
But good movie.
Daniel Day-Lewis again, you know what I mean? And just the whole idea...
Yeah. He's phenomenal.
His wife, in order to keep him... starts poisoning him so that she can take care of him and nurture him back to health. You know what I mean? That whole like little psychology thing that goes on there is just amazing. And then just the kind of tedium, you know, like he's like, he goes, once I get into something, I just want to learn everything there is about, you know, clothiers and, you know, all those people that did all that stuff back then and how it was such a craft and all that thing. So like, when he hired the guy to do production design for There Will Be Blood, he went to this guy and he's like, well, we need to go research and see what these derelicts look like and stuff like that. And the guy goes, here's what we're going to do is we're going to go find children's books from that time. And they will have the most accurate stuff, I promise you. And he goes, sure as shit. He goes, we went and found all these children's books from back then with these detailed illustrations and stuff like that of what all this looked like. And he goes, what little photographs we could get, we're like, oh, this is totally it, you know, this is so clearly these people. And I'm like, who would think of that, you know? But that's the production designer, your higher production designer,
right?
He also does all location, so like none of these are sets, so he goes out and he finds every place that they shoot. So, you know,
yeah,
like that whole underground bunker where he walks around, it's got all the murals and stuff like that in it. That's a real place, you know. Cool. All right,
pretty good.
I could go on forever, so I'm stopping right there.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you got to watch it. You got to check it out. Watch it a couple times, you know. Experience it. You know, good movie.
Yeah, and nothing we said will really spoil it because it's such an enjoyable, it's not about the plot, it's not about surprises or any of that kind of stuff. You know, everything is kind of forecast, you know, they're not worried about those kind of plot devices.
Right, exactly. Not what it's about. Okay, are we wrapping it up?
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump? Say!
I can see it every day. I see it on the radio. I don't exactly see it on the radio. You get what I'm saying anyway?
Experiencing
.com, as Tara would say. Unsane Radio .com.
As Professor Feather would say.
Unsane Radio is on Facebook. Tar and Feather Psycho Cinema. We have a YouTube channel. Go check it out. We've got about 10 movies, 10 episodes up with more to come. One of my favorites, if you haven't ever seen it, Detour. Okay, we've got Detour up there. If you've never seen the movie, that's really a excellent movie. It's a good movie.
I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Oh, yeah, and our episode is brilliant.
It's
great. It's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done.
I wonderful.
The episode. Yeah, go check it out. It's good. It's good. And that's about it for me.
And Heavy Metal Horror Podcast on Facebook. Heavy Metal Horror Podcast on the YouTube. Montag Lewis, one word, at Instagram. We have all kinds of good things coming your way on the Heavy Metal Horror Podcast. Gadfly, where will you be?
Oh, yeah. What about We Freaks? We Freaks.
WEEFREEKZ. Web comic, family friendly, circus freaks. It's just like Peanuts if it was in a circus sideshow freak show. Beautiful.
Midnight Gadfly has been helping Dr. Tarr with his baby food line, you know, with his marketing. But I
regurgitard, is that
no, no, that's a good one. We should have used that one. But I said, yeah, whatever you do, don't pair your last name with baby food. Don't say it. But he didn't listen, and it's now been shut down. Think about it. Dr. Tarr and
Dr. Tarr.
Baby food.
And baby food.
Don't say it.
I understand. I understand. Hail St. Nicholas.
Hail St. Nicholas. Or what was Sergio's? He was Saint something, wasn't it? Sergio Saint Carlos.
Saint Carlos.
Yeah. So hail Saint Carlos.